Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano.
You know, he's one of those guys that loves to play the game of football. He loves to compete. If we can have a team full of Darren Carrington when it comes to competing and playing the game, we'll have one hell of a football team.
When Willie Taggart took over the football program, when he was hired by the University of Oregon to be its next football coach, he made some bold statements. Among them,
make no excuses. Blame no one, and do something. We will continue to live by those beliefs as we return this football program to the lawful status that it deserves.
And he's been held to that standard himself, and now is apparently holding his players to that standard. For those of you who haven't been following the news in the last week or so, Darren Carrington, a standout wide receiver, who has had some disciplinary issues himself in his time at Oregon, was arrested in Eugene for a DUII, allegedly under the influence, and at a fast food restaurant where he was later arrested and then released after they do what they do with the DUII. But the news, the real news, is that Darren Carrington has been suspended indefinitely by Willie Taggart, and now apparently has gone from the football program, but we don't have that officially from the University of Oregon. I have called this a great decision by Willie Taggart to suspend Carrington, and Carrington has gone out on social media saying, so long, fellas, all that. Much of this left up in the air. I wanted to get Andrew Greif of the Oregonian and OregonLive.com on the show to talk about the Taggart situation, what happens to the Oregon program if Carrington isn't going to be a part of it. And Andrew Greif, of course, does a fantastic job covering Oregon football and laying it all down and being around this team. And he's had his own issues with Willie Taggart. We're going to get to that, too, in this interview with Andrew Greif. But I've asked him to give us a couple minutes of his time to talk about this, and he joins us right now.
Make no excuses, blame no one, and do something.
Again, there's Willie Taggart on his opening news conference. Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com. He covers Oregon football, is joining us right now. Andrew, thanks for making time for us.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
The Darren Carrington story. I keep hearing from people this is an easy one for Willie Taggart because of the mistakes or the things that Carrington has done in the past, and this isn't his recruit. And is it an easy call for him?
In some ways, it would seem to be that Willie Taggart has kind of talked himself into an easy decision, because when he took over, he was really vocal and really direct about how he would handle players who got out of line. He said there's a right way to do things and a wrong way. And if you do the wrong thing, there won't be room for you on the team. You know, with Darren Carrington, obviously this DUII arrest on that charge and some other citations, that this isn't the first time that he's incurred some problems in Eugene with reportedly, failing the drug test prior to the 2015 national championship game. Being accused of breaking a man's arm last year. No charges were ever brought in that. But there's been a history here, and now Willie Taggart kind of faces a call. What makes it even tougher, though, for Carrington, I think, is that, Taggart had a really strong response to David Reeves' arrest on a DUII charge. He was the assistant coach, of course, who was arrested in early January after only a few days on the job. And he was fired. It was planned to be fired immediately before he resigned. So, that was dealt with so swiftly that you would think that that's kind of laid the precedent for Carrington, the response. And yet, I'm not quite sure which way he will go.
This Ducks receiving corps, they're not a great deep bunch. Not a lot of talent there that's proven outside of Charles Nelson, who is a playmaker. But so where do they go from there? And is that even a factor here? Or do you think Willie's such in a corner with his early statement that he's got no wiggle room there?
I, without knowing exactly what he's thinking, I'm sure it could be somewhat of a factor. But I would think that just given his public statements about discipline and how important it is and how He was surprised that people who broke rules were allowed to stay on the team before. That's what he said to Sports Illustrated in December. It would seem that this would be something where Carrington's going to serve a very lengthy suspension or be booted altogether. But the receiving core is a huge factor. Not only do you have very few receivers with experience, Oregon, don't forget, graduated all three tight ends from last year, who were their main tight end. So you've got one guy there who's a stud, who's a redshirt freshman upcoming, but behind him, it's pretty blank slate. So at a bunch of different positions, they are lacking experience catching the ball.
Everybody knows Justin Herbert's going to be the starting quarterback, right? I mean, he's the starter, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that was really in doubt leading spring. Taggart talked a lot about how he hadn't made any decisions yet, and I think that was, in some ways, people saw through that. In other ways, I think that that's kind of what he had to say, because he trumps up competition. He wasn't just going to go name one position starter after spring. That wouldn't have jived with his message of making sure that guys were on their toes all summer. But if it wasn't already clear then, the transfers, Terry Wilson and now Travis Johnson, have left basically Justin Herbert backed up only by Braxton Burmeister and Taylor Alley, who are a true freshman and a guy who's played very minimally. That was a couple years ago behind him. So Herbert seems to be no doubt the starter.
All right, you've got a quarterback that you believe in. You've got a running back in Royce Freeman we've all seen make plays. Charles Nelson is out there. Who else is at that receiver position? Is it Dylan Mitchell? Is it somebody else? Is there a player nobody's thinking about or talking about that you think could make some noise?
Well, Dylan Mitchell is definitely next man up, behind Charles Nelson, I should say. Nelson is an experienced guy. He's short. He won't be able to go up and get balls like Carrington did necessarily, or Dwayne Stanford last year by any means. He was, 6'5". Nelson is, 5'9", 5'10". Dylan Mitchell is a former Mr. Tennessee football player. I mean, he was recruited, had offers to play for Duke and, I believe, Kentucky for basketball. He was a guy who was really sought after, and he got hurt last year in preseason and never really was able to live up to the huge, huge expectations for him. But I think this year he gets on track. And then you've got question marks. Alex Ofadale, a really highly rated recruit out of Missouri out of high school, but hasn't really played much, been hurt. Yet Darian McNeil, a true freshman out of Florida, one of the first guys
to
really commit.
I love that kid.
Yeah. Extremely small, extremely fast, though. I could go on down, but basically, after Nelson, you were kind of wondering, I don't know what to do here. And let me just say this. I think this whole situation and the kind of bare coverage they have at receiver, it reminds me a lot of 2014, entering the 2014 season when Braylon Addison injured his knee in spring, was out for the year, and everyone thought there's only Keenan Lowe returning. Who the heck's going to catch the ball for Marcus Mariota? And they ended up having the ingredients for an excellent receiving core. So you've seen Oregon come out of worse positions looking great. I'm wondering if maybe those necessary ingredients are here for this. But right now, currently, it's not an enviable position.
Andrew Greif of the Oregonian and Oregon Live, doing a great job covering Oregon football in particular. I know you've had your up and downs with Willie Taggart. I thought that you did a great job reporting on him from the start. How is the relationship with Taggart now? Are you finding it easy to work with him?
Yeah, all spring it was great. That was no problem at all. I thought that he was easy to work with. We got along just fine. So I was really encouraged.
I thought.
Yeah.
He's also so strong recruiting, and we've seen what he can do when he gets in the room with somebody. And I think personable and socially intelligent and all those things are necessary to recruit. I think that he'd be great with donors. I think he'd be great with the media. I think he'd be great with fans. I mean, it just makes sense that that's who he is.
Yeah, I think that, making relationships is definitely his strong suit, whether it's whichever way you go with, like you said, with donors or with media or with recruits or who you want to play for the program or current players, that's clearly his strong suit. Obviously, I think he's actually going to be a really good offensive play caller, too. I think the last two seasons at USF proved that he's really good at pivoting and not afraid to change things up when they're not working, going from the really pound and ground game that he got at Stanford under Jim Harbaugh to the more wide open spread that still incorporates the run. I think that was a huge pivot point for his career. And so you're seeing someone who can kind of establish those relationships bring guys into the program. But if the production isn't there, he's proven that he can say, okay, we got to rethink this. And that's you want that flexibility in a coach.
We're talking to Andrew Greif of the Oregonian, OregonLive.com. The temptation with Willie Taggart, because those recruiting classes in future classes are all being ranked so high, is to say that he just needs to get bridge from this season to 2018 or wherever he needs to get. And obviously the schedule, I love the schedule for Oregon in 2018 too. It gets easy. And they have a chance to, I think, have a really nice 10-plus win season. But how does this season factor in holding those recruiting classes?
You know, I think it's really important because geography is such a big factor in this recruiting class for 2018, I should say. Sorry, you know, a lot of these guys are being recruited from Florida, from a long way away, and I think there has to be. He seems to have an extremely good bond, and Mario Cristobal and Raymond Woody are in particular doing a really good job recruiting a state and a region in the Southeast. But you know, what if Oregon loses one or two or three games early, or you know, do those kind of in-state schools like Florida, Miami, Florida State, are they able to pick off anybody? I don't know. You know, I think that one of the smart things that Oregon has been doing in recruiting is confronting the geography head on and saying, you know, I've seen recruiting leaflets that they sent out that recruits have posted on Twitter basically saying, like, dare to be different. Like, you know, challenging people, like, do you want to do something really different and go to Oregon instead of staying in your comfort zone? And that's, I think, addressing the problem of coming to the Pacific Northwest that all kinds of coaches have had at Oregon previously, where they say we're so far away from recruiting hotbeds. This is kind of issued a challenge to recruits and said, you know, only the strong come here, essentially. And that's kind of a smart little psychology that they're trying to do.
I want to ask you three questions because I have three burning questions, only three questions when it comes to Oregon football this next season that I think have to be answered. And I think you're the guy that has the answers. Will you play this game with me?
I will.
All right. If Justin Herbert gets hurt, who plays quarterback?
Right now, Braxton Burmeister is that guy. He looked at some times like a true freshman in the spring, which he was. But he's got really good feet. He's definitely a more polished runner than passer at this point, but I think that's to be expected. I mean, he's just a true freshman. He's only been on campus for a little bit, but he would be the guy.
On defense, this team hasn't been great in the last couple of years. They get a new D coordinator. They also get Scott Pagano, who is a transfer as a senior and a fifth-year guy on the defensive line. Does this defense stop somebody?
They'll stop some people, but they will also, I think, run into some of the same challenges as last season. You know, the depth isn't great, and, you know, the athleticism is yet to be seen how it'll match up in the open field when they're trying to make tackles. So I think it does help that they will go back to a 3-4, which is what some guys are used to, the more veteran players on this defense, before last season switched to the 4-3. I think that will help a little bit. And I think the Jim Leavitt has shown that he's a really good communicator, very blunt. So I don't think that people will ever go into a game surprised or confused about what their assignment is. They will stop some people. I think they'll be Colorado, when Leavitt took over, the defense improved by, I want to say, 10 points per game. I could be wrong. I could be a couple points off there, but it was a pretty impressive first-year change. I think if he can cut it by a touchdown, they'll stop some people.
I look at the depth chart. And my third question has to do with who is the most important player not named Justin Herbert on this team on either side of the ball. And the temptation is to say Royce Freeman, but you got Tony Brooks-James who's backing him up. Is it true or false that Charles Nelson, who will return kicks, return punts now that Carrington's not there potentially, and be a go-to receiver, is Charles Nelson the MVP of this team or the guy you can't live without?
Well, I think that he could be. I think you make there is a case to be made for Charles Nelson because he factors into special teams as well. So if his role is anything like it was last season, he'll be returning kickoffs or could be, and maybe in the conversation for punts as well. He needs to be more sure-handed this year. Last year, he's such a smart, confident player that it was a little striking when he bobbled the ball on multiple times. And so I think that if he can get more sure-handed in the kickoff return and maybe in punts, definitely receiving, I think he'll be have a huge senior season.
Andrew Greif, thank you. You're the best, man.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
There's Andrew Greif of the Oregonian and Oregon Live doing what he does. Laying it down. A lot of questions for Willie Taggart in this first season, but this is a team that's coming off a 2-7 conference record. 4-8 overall. And the loss of Darren Carrington, look, I was never a big Carrington fan. He's a little too, it's all about me, for me. He made great plays, tremendous, talented playmaker. But I go back to a Chip Kelly quote, and if you can't trust him on Friday, can you trust him on Saturday? And for Darren Carrington, it came, it came about, can you trust him on Thursday? Can you trust him on Wednesday? Can you, and I hate relying on people who have shown a pattern of bad decision making, to say the least. I'm not here to condemn somebody for a DUI or condemn somebody because they allegedly failed a drug test before a national championship game. But if you can't trust somebody Monday through Friday, can you trust them on Saturday or whatever day of the week you're playing football? And that is a easy one for Willie Taggart, this Darren Carrington thing. Greif points out, like, rather astutely, how he painted himself into a corner with comments like, you know, hey, you're not gonna get along. There's not gonna be a place for you on this team if you can't do the things that are necessary to be on this team. I love that. Again, it comes back to that. Hey, there, it's not a right to be on this team just because you have a scholarship. You don't have a right to be there. If you're driving under the influence and you're at a McDonald's and you're getting arrested and cited and you're failing drug tests and being accused of other things that are awful, at what point does a football program have a right to be like, eh, you're not for us? I think at this point for Darren Carrington. But I pointed out on Twitter, I said, look, this is a classic example of a coach who understands that you don't sacrifice a short-term thing for the big picture. Jerry Tarkanian, who I covered many years ago, all the time sacrificed the big picture because he needed a short-term gain. And he would take a player who had problems or had done something wrong or failed this or didn't have this grade, and he would go, oh, you're the poor kid, excuse. And at some point that just bites you because you have this air of tolerance in the program that players know, and we saw it under Mark Helfrich. Players know they can do whatever they want. They're still going to play. So that happened. And for Willie Taggart to come in and see this go on very early before he's even coached a game with a player that is a Mark Helfrich recruit in a situation where, like, it's a DUII, and yeah, as Greif points out, David Reeves, his former offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator, got flushed for that. You kind of have to do this if you're Willie. That said, I'm still giving the guy credit. It's not like you're giving credit, as Chris Rock said, you give him credit for feeding his kids, as you're supposed to. But I got to give him credit because I see too often in sports coaches that are willing to look the other way, willing to have that, it's one-time thing. Oh, you don't understand. We're going to let the facts come out. And we see young coaches all the time. Chip Kelly's a great example. Prior to the national championship game, that summer before he had that season where they went to the national championship game, he had all kinds of problems. He had players fighting. He had players getting in trouble. He had players who were arrested, domestic violence. And Chip Kelly's philosophy was not to suspend guys, but to let the facts come out. He and I argued about that on this radio show. And years later, Chip Kelly changed his philosophy. And he said, you know what? I am going to suspend guys pending the outcome because it's not worth it. Because the message when you don't suspend is, hey, I'm with you. I'm on your side. This isn't all about, this isn't all about football. I'm in your corner. That's a very dangerous message to send as a head football coach. An arrest for a DUII is a serious thing. That's an important message. And Willie Taggart is sending an important message by suspending Darren Carrington indefinitely And Carrington later on social media being like, so long, guys, I'm out. He knows. That's pretty interesting that Willie Taggart hasn't coached a game, and yet a player who has been a chronic misbehavior is well aware that his actions just cost him. That tells me Willie Taggart's reaching. He's reaching his players. He's getting to them, that they understand the expectations. And I like that. All right, tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me, who steps up if Darren Carrington isn't part of this Oregon program? Is Charles Nelson the guy? Is it someone else? I like Darian, the real deal McNeil, kid out of Florida that he recruited. He's young, and he doesn't know any better. Young, talented, fast as heck, and doesn't know any better. Or is it somebody like Dylan Mitchell, this sophomore wide receiver who seizes the opportunity? It always seems to happen every football season. All right, leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
We've talked about the celebrity golf tournament that you're going to hear as part of tomorrow's broadcast. Really is all tomorrow's broadcast here on the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. You're going to hear from Gary Anderson, the Oregon State football coach. You're also going to hear from Jason Phillips, who is the passing game coordinator at Oregon State. And I think Oregon State realizes it needs to throw the football, or spin it, as Gary Anderson says, to have great success. And not only just on the field, but in recruiting. Like, kids want to score points. It's like in basketball where all the coaches say they want to, what kind of tempo do you want to play? They all say we want to run. No coach is like, well, we want to be back to the basket. We want to slow things down. We want to score about 80 a game. Nobody says that because that's not going to help you in recruiting. But Gary Anderson told me multiple times around National Signing Day that he realizes, hey, we got to spin it. We got to throw it. And Jason Phillips will be part of the broadcast tomorrow because he's playing in the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation Celebrity Golf Tournament out at the Reserve. It's brought to you by and presented by OregonBlinds.net. And if you are somebody from Portland to Eugene who's looking for blinds, go to OregonBlinds.net and support the companies that support the BFT Foundation. That's all I ask. All right, Gina Mizell of the Oregonian is on vacation, I find out, but we have called her up and dialed her up, and we're now bugging her. And we're dragging her, kicking and screaming onto this radio show. And I'm told she's in the airport traveling from Maui to Kauai. What was that photo of you, if you can share with our listeners? Were you scuba diving, or what were you doing?
We were snorkeling. So my mom and I are in Maui. We're actually leaving Maui today and going to Kauai later on this week. But we were snorkeling at our hotel, and they took us out on a kayak to an area with a lot of coral reef, and there were tons of sea turtles around. So it was awesome. I would highly recommend it for anybody that's in Maui. But yeah, it was really fun, and they got a lot of cool underwater photos, which we were convinced we weren't going to get any photos, and everyone would have to trust that we did it. So I'm glad we have photographic evidence of swimming with sea turtles.
I really appreciate you giving us some of your time. By the way, in Kauai, it's not only home to Marcus Mariota, but I was also,
yes.
Anna and I were married in Kauai. And
there you go.
The cool thing about that is the way they do weddings there. Like, you would think, like a normal thing is you have to go get a marriage license and you have to go through all this formality. The marriage license that we got came at a fish market that you get there. You can buy like beef jerky and a beer and a Slurpee, and you can get a marriage license there.
That sounds like a totally typical day. No, that's awesome. Wow, that's a great little fun fact. I love it.
Yeah, the Pono Fish Market. And they give you a bumper sticker when you get the marriage license because you're officially married at that point. But they give you a bumper sticker that says, I was married at the Pono Fish Market.
That's perfect. What a great marketing campaign. That's awesome. I love it.
That's proudly displayed in our home, that bumper sticker. Gina Mizell of the Oregonian and Oregon Live. I don't want to ignore Oregon State because what happens is we get so focused on Darren Carrington and Oregon and all these things. I want to know what's going on at Oregon State, and I'm going to see Gary Anderson tomorrow at the golf tournament, but what is the state of the union? Who's going to be the quarterback for the Beavers next year?
That's still a great question that obviously is going to work itself out during fall camp. I mean, I think we maybe thought that that decision would be made during spring practice, especially given that that's when Daryl Gerritsen won the job last year, but nobody pulled enough ahead to really warrant getting that distinction. So, of course, they have Daryl Gerritsen back. Marcus McMarion is back after starting the last six games of last season. And then Jake Luton, the junior college kid with the big frame and the big arm, is the newcomer. But, you know, he showed some signs of having a really, really nice arm, but also was adjusting to things and was not 100% healthy during spring practice. So I'll be fascinated to see how all three of those guys look when fall camp starts in about 3 weeks, because a lot of the work that needed to be done during the summer and during these next few weeks when they're doing those player-run workouts and they're working with the receivers on their own and all of that stuff. So if there's a marketable difference with any of those three guys, sorry if you can hear the airport
it's
noise,
all right.
But if there's a marketable difference with any of those three guys, I think that's the one who's going to win the job here in the fall.
Jake Luton, you mentioned that. He seems to be the guy, like if we're all betting on a guy that is going to be the guy, it seems like Luton would be that guy.
Yeah, no, I would 100% agree with you. For number one, because of just the fact that when you recruit a junior college player, doesn't matter if they're a quarterback, a defensive lineman, a receiver, a running back, whoever, you're expecting them to come in and compete for playing time right away. That's why you recruit that guy. So, and just given the way that Oregon State wants to have its offense develop, I mean, they hired Jason Phillips to come in, and he's the guy that's got a background in the air raid and the run and shoot and a lot of pass-happy attacks. And again, not saying they're going to suddenly become a full-blown air raid team, but they want to be better in the passing game. That's been such a hard thing for this team to do during Gary Anderson's tenure. So they want a guy who can throw the football. So that seems to be Luton, who has the best tier arm of the bunch. But again, he's got to know the playbook. He's got to be able to know the system and have chemistry with those receivers. And he certainly lacks in that area just because he hasn't been in the program for as long. So we'll see. But yeah, that seems to have been the question around this program since John Mannion left. And so they're looking for some clarity there for sure.
Ryan Nall at running back. You've got Thomas Tyner coming in. You've got Artavius Pierce. Who else am I missing there? I mean, they've got like a full backfield.
Yeah, Trey Johnson.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.